Hello and welcome to Repertory Screenings, episode 103. I'm your host, Em. With me is our regular co-host, Jackson.
Mavis.
And Destiny.
It's me.
We're back after a month off. Whoops.
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 Whoops. Whoops. Whoops.
Whoops. Movies. Destiny, I think you have the least movies, so.
I sure do. I watched Dream Demon, which is this 1988 movie directed by Harley Kokelis about this British woman who's marrying this Falklands hero, but she's been having these weird dreams about him, like, being violent, and they get very, like, gory, and the dreams keep coming, and then she befriends this American, and there's these two sleazy press guys who are, like, trying to get dirt on her because she's a virgin and, like, all this shit. And it's just about trauma, and it didn't make any sense. And but it has a lot of cool gore sequences. But yeah, the funny thing is, her name's Diana, and she's just being treated like, you know, kind of like a princess. And it's very ridiculous in the 80s. But yeah, a lot of good gore. A lot of good dream sequences, a lot of interesting imagery, but the plot made no sense. So, didn't love it.
Mm-hmm.
And the second movie was one that Em and I watched together, which was a Shirley MacLaine vehicle from '64 called What a Way to Go, directed by J. Lee Thompson. The tagline for this is, "What a cast! What a past! What a show! What a way to go!"
That's so 60s.
Yeah, it's really 60s. It's delightful. The movie opens with, like, this entire set in pink, and there's just a lot of great... So it's about this woman that is upset because her husbands keep dying every time they reach some sort of, like, financial success. And so she's being left with bigger and bigger sums of money, and she's, like, complaining to a shrink about it. And the rest of the movie's told through flashbacks where she talks about each husband. And the husbands are played by, let's see if I can remember off the top of my head, in order. Or not in order, but I think she marries, is it Dean Martin first? I can't hear you.
Oh, sorry, I was muted. I hit the button at some point. I can give you the order. I can give you the exact order, which is we've got her teenage rich guy she's supposed to marry to, like, raise up in the world that she doesn't marry, played by Dean Martin. And then we've got Dick Van Dyke. And then we got Paul Newman, then Robert Mitchum, and then Gene Kelly. Just a cavalcade of guys.
Yeah, and Rock Hudson plays, like, a guy she rejects early on.
There's no Rock. That's not Rock Hudson. That's Dean Martin.
Or not Rock Hudson. Yeah, Dean Martin. My bad. Yeah, so the favorite husband sequence for me is the Paul Newman sequence, because he's like this beatnik artist with a beard.
In Paris.
That's very, very pivotal for the story that takes place in Paris. And she always has this little gag where she's like, "It was kind of like one of those yada yada movies." And then there's, like, a scene that's, you know, parodying the movie. So for the Paul Newman sequence, she's like, "It was kind of like one of those French art films or whatever." And it's just this black and white sequence of them, like, having sex constantly.
Her hair is so big, and she's in a different sexy pose every time. And it's subtitled, like, it opens with her singing Frère Jacques, and Frère Jacques is, like, translated underneath in the subtitles. But then when Paul Newman shows up and he's, like, talking to a guy on the street, and they're, like, going back and forth in rapid fire French, and, like, the subtitles are only translating, like, the broadest idea of their conversation. Like, they talk for, like, 5 minutes, like, "Your wife is very beautiful." And then he finally responds, "Yes, she is." Even though they've been going back and forth. It's really good and on the nose about that sort of thing. The one I liked was the Robert Mitchum one. He's, like, a huge like airplane tycoon. And she's like, oh, I'll be safe because he's already rich, so he won't be driven mad by his successes because he's married to me. And that one is just like a classic 40s Hollywood like studio thing. And so it's like it has these big elaborate title cards and just shows them walking through like these huge like dinner parties where she's in a new fabulous gown every time. The whole thing with this movie is it's just got a huge like costume budget. She's in a new costume in basically every scene, and they're
it's
all
Edith
fabulous.
Head, isn't it?
Yeah, it's Edith Head. This was originally going to be a Marilyn Monroe vehicle, and then she died, so they got Shirley MacLaine.
That's funny. Sorry to say, but it is pretty funny.
Yeah, it's very extravagant and it bombed horribly. It's very like off trend for where the 60s were headed cinematically, but because of that, I think it's just fabulous. I had a great time.
It's so funny. It is so funny. I love a movie that likes to make fun of movies, especially an old movie making fun of movies.
Yeah.
And this was a good time. And then shout out to Gene Kelly, who is in this just doing the choreography for this, and so good. Really enjoyed it. Loved all the gowns, loved all the hair. I like Shirley MacLaine. I'm really glad she's still kicking.
Yeah. What else do I have? I watched Zone of Interest, the 2023 film.
Oh, I guess that was... Man, it's been a while since we've done this.
Yes. which is about the commandant of Auschwitz and his family living right next door to the concentration camp. And it's about their, like, domestic life, where on the other side of their garden wall is millions of people being murdered. It's grim. It's really good. It's on Max now. That's where I watched it. I highly recommend it if you have any stomach for that sort of thing. There's been a lot of talk about this one, so I feel like it's like kind of talked out. I agree. It's very good. People can get used to all sorts of fucking things.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm curious to see it because I've seen a lot of discussion about it. I assume I will like it in the same uncomfortable way.
Yeah.
But every time I sit down to watch a movie, I'm like usually eating dinner, and I'm like, well, I don't really want to
watch that.
Not a dinner movie.
And there's not really a dinner movie.
Watch a bunch of Nazis like go swimming and chill out. Yeah.
Exactly. One of my friends tried to watch it like on the bus and got 7 minutes in and was like, well, I guess I can't really do this on the bus.
Yeah. One of the things I think is really interesting is like the way it's like shot is they just put a bunch of cameras in the house and then like just rolled it. Almost like a Big Brother style thing where like people are acting in the house, but like all the rooms are just have cameras, like static cameras in them. So it just has this sort of like reality TV is not the right thing, but it is evoking that sort of like voyeurism of just watching these people interact in a space as they know they can just kind of like move through the rooms and do their scenes and it'll be caught no matter where they are really.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And then I watched Late Night with the Devil a couple days ago, which is the 2023 horror film about a guy who's like he's like the second tier late night host in the 70s competing with Johnny Carson and losing. And for the Halloween episode, he brings on like a psychic and a skeptic and like a lady who's writing a hot new book about a girl who'd been possessed, and turns out that possession is actually maybe a little more real than you thought, and it goes really badly in a found footage way. It was all right. It has like a cool demon effect. There was a lot of discourse when this came out because there's like a couple interstitial title cards that are AI art, which is really unfortunate because it's literally like 1% of the movie. I'm like, why'd you have to like make this your thing? You could have just hired an artist to make these fucking cards. They're not that big a deal.
It's very weird.
But people don't use AI because of like smart reasons is the actual answer.
It's true.
The actual problem is that, I just don't think it's like that compelling. I think it like moves too fast through a lot of different things. I think the skeptic guy, he's like a James Randi type who's like, if anyone can prove to me that this because he used to be a magician and now he's like a leader of a skeptic group. And he's like, anyone can prove to me, I've got a check for $100,000 right here. That I'll give to anyone who can prove supernatural stuff to me. And I think he's really fun. Who's the guy? Because the guy who plays him is someone.
I can pull it up 1 second.
Yeah, but the main thing is, like, because it's all, like, found footage of, like, this lost television broadcast, but that's not enough. Like, in between, like, commercial breaks, it cuts to, like, this black and white, like, supposedly behind-the-scenes footage that was filmed during that night. And it's like, no one's shooting a behind-the-scenes thing of a TV, like, a TV show. Also, that stuff is all, like, in normal widescreen and looks really nice, and it's, like, really annoying. I think it would be better if it held to the format of being a found footage TV show thing more. But it doesn't, and that's a problem. Oh, he plays the skeptic guy is the guy who plays the human Agent Smith like body in the Matrix sequels, the Bane. Remember Bane?
Really?
Yeah.
The guy literally cast on his ability to do a Hugo Weaving impression.
Yes.
Incredible. I'm glad he's still doing his thing.
Yeah, he's still doing stuff. He's actually the best part of the movie. And made me think about Ghostwatch, which is a fucking incredible all-time classic movie that holds to its format better. Partially, it reads as like a period piece, but it's not at the time, right? It's really contemporary. That's the whole point. Is they're doing a BBC, what if a BBC mid, like, you know,
I mean, like, it aired on TV and people missed the fact that it wasn't, like, people turned in 5 minutes in and you don't realize that this is fake. Because they got fucking Craig Charles to be a character.
Yes. It just has all of the accoutrement of like it's like if you got a real news show now to make a horror movie or whatever.
It's absolutely crazy. I can't believe Ghostwatch is real.
Yeah. But there's other like found footage like stuff that is period that I like, and even like television show ones. There's one I really like that I talked about on this before called Deadstream, about a YouTuber who goes in a haunted house to get uncancelled. He's like on his apology tour after getting cancelled, and one of his sponsors needs him to go in a house. That movie's great. I highly recommend it. It's very Evil Dead. Late Night with the Devil, I would not necessarily recommend, other than I had 90 minutes and I wanted to watch a horror movie, and it was the first thing I clicked on Shudder that was 90 minutes long. So...
There was a tweet going around of a clip from Late Night of the Devil where they were dunking on the big scare. And then I watched it and I thought, I thought that was all right. I didn't think that needed the intense dunk. But it did make me laugh because the big scare was the mechanic from the video game Immortality.
Yes, there's extremely a bit where they roll back some footage and there's a creepy lady there.
They literally have to like precisely find the right moment to make the ghost appear. And I'm like, I played that game. It's a good game.
It's really funny because they do that, and then it's not even like the thing that's like the cool bit, because it's in the context of the bit, it's like he is like a ghost of his dead wife who's like trying to protect him from all of this stuff. It's not even the evil ghost that shows up later. It's very corny. I gave it like 3 stars. It's extremely like the most mid movie in the world.
I really liked it. I thought it was like, it's not very scary, but no. I like the way it looks. It looks really great, and I thought the that main guy, I can never think of his name, but that main actor, I really like him.
Okay.
Mid-genre movies are kind of like, you know, sometimes you don't want to go to a nice restaurant. Sometimes you just need a mid-90-minute genre movie.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Jackson, I know you've got the most movies of all of us this time.
Yeah, I've got a bunch of movies. I wouldn't say like fully movie mode, but I did watch some movies. I don't necessarily need to talk about all of them, I watched, why do we want to peek in here? I watched the David Lynch Dune movie. I think that came up last time.
No, you had not done that yet.
I can't get to the point of like, it's actually good, because it is kind of a disastrous mess.
I've never understood that. I think it's fine. It's like a totally fine movie.
I mean, it's completely incomprehensible and nothing that...
I'd already read the book, I guess, when I watched it. I don't know. I just was like, oh, yeah, that's a Dune adaptation.
But it strips out everything that's like I like about the book. It's, like, so barren of...
Little girl goes, he is the Kwisatz Haderach, that's Dune to me. That's all I need.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, the scenes in Dune are good, and the visuals in Dune are good, and watching Dune is fine. It just doesn't, like, cohere emotionally like the book Dune.
Yeah.
But it's weird. It's fucking weird. It's you know, many bad movies wish they were as good as Dune.
That's true.
It's kind of where I'm at. Like, it's a good time. I started watching like some Godzilla movies for some reason. Not necessarily Godzilla, because I watched Godzilla Raids Again a while ago. But I watched like Rodan and the Mysterians.
I love Rodan is like maybe one of my favorite kaiju movies. Something about it just really hits for me. I don't know.
Yeah, I really liked it. I thought Rodan was great. It has a classic ending. That's fantastic. Yeah. All the opening in the town's great. Really, really like Rodan.
I think it's like a cool monster. I think, you know, Big Bird is cool. All the bit where it's like buzzing over the town and like all the shingles are coming off the roofs and stuff. I'm like, that's a great effect. All the weird ecology mining stuff, I think, is like more. It goes in a more interesting direction than where Godzilla ends up going, right? Because Godzilla just is not focused on that stuff. Ultimately,
yeah, it's so much more like procedural about the town.
Yeah.
I think it being a remote town specifically makes it gives it a very different feel to Godzilla, right? Which is all about cities and cities specifically as like the identity of Japan post World War II, etc., etc.
Yeah.
And then the Mysterians is not very good. That's a bad.
Apparently, the Mysterians is weird because like it's like not very good, but also it's like a fucking iconic.
So it's like weird because it was hilarious because it's kind of like watching like literally decades of Japanese sci-fi get born.
Yeah, it's like the first time you watch Fantastic Planet, you're like, oh, everyone's stealing from this.
But it's also like, the plot is that the UN has to unite and come together in the name of peace, but just coincidentally, uniting in the name of peace happens to involve both the rearmament of Japan and protecting the racial purity of Japanese women from the foreign invaders.
Yes. For the record, I meant Forbidden Planet, but Fantastic Planet also lifted by everybody. But okay. Fantastic Planet is a much better movie than Forbidden Planet.
Okay. But yeah, so there's a lot of like weird stuff. I just kind of thought it was kind of boring. Eventually, it was the big problem in that like all the like kaiju stuff is attacking like the big enemy base with planes. So there's no context.
That's the thing I like about that. I like when it's just like ray guns and like tanks and stuff.
I like when there's a town and it cuts between the like model shots and like people running away. I like the disaster is good because it's happening to people. It like contextualizes it. This was kind of models blowing up against each other for a while.
Yeah, I like that. I like that about it.
Like my favorite bit was the bit with the monster. The briefly is like a kaiju mech that they have that does like regular kaiju stuff. I'm told that comes back in later Godzilla things.
Yep.
And that's a cool one. But yeah, didn't hit that well. And then I also watched Godzilla Minus One, the new one.
Did not
like it very much.
Weird.
It was just kind of shit. I don't know. It wasn't like the worst movie ever. Like it started okay. There was stuff in the setup that I found interesting, but it just kind of collapsed into ridiculous nationalist nonsense by the end. They like form the libertarian private reformation of the Imperial Japanese Navy to fight World War II, but good this time against Godzilla.
You mean Yamazaki made a weird nationalist film? Fucking color me surprised.
I know, what a shock. But the problem is that stuff it could have hit in a way where it was just like funny good, I feel like. Yeah. But it's too deeply sincere about the like kamikaze pilot tragedy you have to live stuff. But kind of fumbles that emotionally at the end. The final scene, I was like, this isn't how movies, what is the fuck's happening here? Which, if you've seen it, you'll know. I was like, this is a complete cop-out of everything the movie was about. What are you doing? Just didn't hit the nationalist stuff I expected, but also like the emotional beats toward the end completely flopped me. So I imagine it would have been, it definitely seems like one of the people liked more in cinema because you could see Godzilla being big and loud, right? Which is like, he was still big and loud on my TV, but not in the same way, right? And then the only other one I want to hit is I watched the Hudsucker Proxy.
One of Destiny's favorite movies.
That's a fucking classic movie.
It's so good.
That's cinema to me. They're having a great time.
I bet my Pulitzer on it.
he adds it back, not counting the mezzanine.
You know, for kids.
The Coen brothers are just goofy guys that like when weird people say things. And it's like, you know, doing its whole Art Deco retro old-timey movie thing, but not really to any... to any purpose. It's not, there's no like grand commentary going on. It's just having fun. It's very silly. Basically like some Looney Tunes shit happening at the end where he's falling off the falling, like he just turns into Roger Rabbit when he falls off the building.
Yeah, and they do that flashback about how the guy double-stitched his pants.
Oh, the double-stitching the pants joke got me to lose my shit. It was so funny. There's a guy who's being, like, thrown out of a building, and he's, like, held up by his pants, and then he flashes back to his tailor, and he's like, I don't need a double-stitch pants. Why am I going to need, like, strong stitching on my pants? And then he's about to die as the pants are breaking, and then it flashes back twice to the tailor going, oh, he's such a nice man. I'll give him the double-stitching for free. He survived. He doesn't fall down to his death. Incredible.
Yeah, I love that movie. That's Paul Newman too, isn't it?
I believe so.
Yeah. Okay, it's been a minute since I've seen it, and I know there's an Anna Nicole Smith cameo. It's got that great the estate of actually I think she was alive. Actually, she was alive when the movie came out. But Katharine Hepburn's like family sued Jennifer Jason Leigh for that accent she does through the whole movie.
What?
Yeah. Or they like threatened to sue. I don't know if they actually sued, but that's what happened. And she reprises it in the most recent season of Fargo, I believe. But
fuck
yeah.
Yeah. I know, I was looking at some of the reactions from the time, and people were not ready to accept how silly Jennifer Jason Leigh was being in this movie.
She kills it. She's like one of my favorite. That's one of my favorite. That's the reason why it's one of my favorite movies. It's her, and just like the way that everything is played is just so. I just love every piece of that movie. All the little pieces that come together to make that what it is as a whole is it's so much fucking fun.
Yeah, the like fucking mythical war going on between the clock guy and the janitor.
Yeah, it's so good. It's so unexpected too, because it's not necessarily a grounded movie, but when it gets into that area, you're like, what?
Yeah, I loved it. I was like, this is extremely the Coen Brothers on their bullshit. I'm sad it was like one of their flops, I guess.
Yeah, it was. It's well regarded now, but like I still don't think it has the due that it deserves. Like I think it's just a stone cold classic. I love it so much.
There were so many just like goofy, ridiculous lines happening constantly. I'm like, why? It would not take many different things happening to Butterfly Effect, this being the one getting like Big Lebowski quoted constantly. Everyone just saying, you know, for kids, constantly.
I know I say it all the time.
It's a blue letter. But yeah, movies. Don't expect to like them, I guess.
Yeah, fair enough. All right. If that's it, we'll get into our movie club this week. We watched Deep Cover, the 1992 crime thriller directed by Bill Duke, a screenplay from Henry Bean and Michael Tolkien. Michael Tolkien, the scriptwriter of The Player, because he wrote the book, The Player. Speaking of movies, don't expect to like them. Now more than ever.
Now more than ever.
Yeah. Jackson, what happens in this movie?
Deep Cover is about Lawrence Fishburne as a guy named Russell Stevens Jr., who his dad is shot like at a robbery for drug money at a liquor store, and so he grows up to be like a respectable cop, and is like promised he's never gonna fall into that life of crime.
Excuse you, he is shot in front of him on Christmas, like it's the fucking backstory of Gremlins, that the one girl found her dad dead in the chimney, basically.
Yeah.
Yes. Like literally in front of a Santa Claus.
Yes.
It is a ridiculous scene. But he's recruited by the DEA, who are like, your psychological profile is criminal, and you should be an undercover cop, and go to LA and become a drug dealer and like work out your way with the family, and we can get some busts. And it proceeds kind of along the lines of you would expect for this kind of story. You know, he find his way in with Jeff Goldblum, like the guy right above him that he initially makes contact with is a loser and gets killed, so he takes his place. Works his way up the chain, eventually realizes that the DEA don't want the top guys because the top guys that they have deals with, and you know, the war on drug stuff, and becomes very disillusioned, quits the DEA, decides to just become a drug like drug lord, gets further and further up the chain of that, but through a subplot throughout the movie is like conscience is constantly being prodded by another cop. What's the cop?
Clarence
Detective
Williams.
Taft.
Detective Taft, yes, as like the other black police officer really in this movie, who is also like a preacher and constantly like trying to save Lawrence Fishburne's soul. And in like the big final confrontation, Jeff Goldblum shoots him, and Lawrence Fishburne realizes he cannot continue on like this, kills Jeff Goldblum, but also realizes he can't go back to the DEA because they're all fucking scumfuck losers. Does his best to like get one over of them, save his girlfriend, and like really reveal the evidence to take down the evil politician, but kind of knows it's worthless and is left with the completely empty choice of what to do with the money. None of it is satisfying because society is fucked on all sides. What would you do? End of movie.
He does get a kid.
Yeah, he also picks up a kid as part of this.
I just thought it was, I don't know, like, there was a part where the kid's mom offers to sell him the kid, and I go, what if he just bought that kid, and he just had a kid the whole movie, and then at the end he just picks the kid.
That character's ridiculous. The cartoonish, how cartoonish can we make the, like, kind of sympathetic but tragically pathetic addicted
lady.
To drugs mom.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's Deep Cover. Kind of plays very straight what it's doing as like an undercover cop war on drugs movie. It's just executed incredibly. Fantastic film. I love this movie.
Well, it has like incredibly like overwrought lighting everywhere. The script is like arch in the way like Lawrence Fishburne is like rhyming his like tragic past and his like nihilistic worldview in between scene transitions. It just has a weirdo energy to it.
Yeah, it's like
yeah,
it's on its Max Payne shit. Like it's knowingly stupidly very much embracing I'm doing a dumb noir movie, but taking it very seriously. With like the way the narration's working, and it never winks with this stuff, right? It knows it's ridiculous, but it never winks.
Yeah.
Would I say it would be how it like mostly approaches this stuff, and also like while Lawrence Fishburne's like extremely in that arch mode, the other characters are a little more ridiculous and heightened, and play off of him in different ways. Like Jeff Goldblum is just peak Jeff Goldblum here.
Well, it's weird because he like starts off as like unassuming lawyer, and then this guy's like he's the flop sweat man, he's gonna fold, he's not gonna be able to do it right, and then he actually turns out to be like basically the main villain, because by the end he's like in a black trench coat and he's got a gun and he's got like evil in his eyes, and I'm like this works way better than I thought it would.
Yeah,
it's really
like,
good.
Yeah, I thought he was miscast like the first half of the movie. I was like, I don't know about Goldblum. And then, like, by the end where his eyes are glowing and he's saying stuff like, those who taught us virtues are the same ones that enslaved us. I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, this is pretty good.
The stuff they do with him is really good, because he's like I say, starts out the lawyer, like the cop lawyer, not the cop, the drug lawyer, right?
Mm-hmm.
And is like a little in over his head, he is the flop sweat man who can't take it, but when he gets a gun, he starts shooting people, it just ends up on top, and that's like the most terrifying thing of all. And the ways in which like he is able to rationalize like his understanding of society and oppression to like justify why he can do it, like I can just get the money and kill everyone, that's fine, I understand society, I've read some books, but that's for that's why I've learned that it's okay for me to do all these things. And Lawrence Fishburne realizing that no, he actually does care about things, he can't do that. It's very corny, but it's very good. I love it. The stuff at the end of the movie where like they really pay off the like contrast in identities, right, between Jeff Goldblum as like a Jewish American and, you know, the Lawrence Fishburne black cop stuff is just so much more. It's throughout the movie, but the way it plays up in the confrontation and becomes central there was like so much more thoughtful than I expected. Like that final confrontation is cooking so hard.
Yeah, I agree.
But also like so much of the movie is explicitly about the ways in which like black America is at the whims of white America wanting to court Latin America to fund, like, provide all the drugs, right? Like, it's like, there's no, black people don't have countries that America wants to install dictatorships in, right?
Yes.
And so they don't care in the same way they care about making, like, electing South American presidents.
Mm-hmm. So, like, yeah, and, like, when the white people in the DEA are talking to, like, the, like, Latin American drug lords who they can fucking send to Cuba or whatever, they're all like, oh yeah, we're doing this. But then when they're talking to Lawrence Fishburne and black people, they're like, oh, we have to stop the like crisis of like drugs that have been inflicted on your people. It's
by
just,
you,
like, so
by the
two-faced.
US government.
Right. But then the movie like, is very clear about that, right? It knows. Yeah, and it's fucking very angry. It's good.
It's a really well-written movie. I wasn't sure about it, and then I sit with it, the more I'm like, wow.
It's really funny, because, like, I think, like, on the face of it, the script is, like, incredibly corny, but the movie just plays it with an earnestness, and, like, you run with it, and you just bring people in, because there's a bit, like, right towards, like, when Lawrence Fishburne gives up being a DEA agent, there's a whole bit where he's like, I thought I was a cop play-acting and being a drug dealer, but I'm a drug dealer play-acting and being a cop, and then he takes his first drink ever, and it's like, this shouldn't work. It's, like, the most corny shit in the world, but it totally lands, because Lawrence Fishburne's fantastic in it, and then he's like riding around, he's like drinking out of his flask and he's snorting coke off a knife, and you're like, oh my god, this guy.
Even Jeff Goldblum's like, what the fuck's happening? Why is this guy, he's like the square guy,
you're supposed
he's
to be like, the cool guy, yeah, you're supposed to keep it together.
He's like the unflappable cool one who everyone thinks is a cop because he's too put together.
And then you're like, oh, he's gonna mess up the next thing, and then he doesn't, he just fucking shoots that guy in the movie theater. Great scene.
That scene's so good.
Yeah.
Because when it takes the turn to be about, like, that's Guzman, right? Like, the specific, I'm trying to remember the hierarchy of names.
No, that's, Gallegos.
Gallegos? Okay.
Yeah.
Guzman's the guy, the final, the
yeah, yeah, he's yeah. the, he's the, senator, like, Mexican senator or whatever.
Yeah, when it takes a turn to, like, stealing Gallegos' money and, like, okay, Gallegos wants to kill us, but we can kill him first, or we can, like, make him realize it's all about the money, et cetera, et cetera. You, like, think you know the beats of the, like, crime movie, like, noose-tightening 20 minutes act three that's going to play out.
Yeah.
And then they just shoot him immediately. It's so good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that stuff lands really well. It's just, it's kind of silly, but like, it looks great. Lawrence Fishburne's in an array of beautiful outfits. There's a bit where it's like, you need to like dress up, because he's just kind of like walking around in like, you know.
Oh my God.
Track. Well,
the first time
he goes, when he's first undercover, he walks into this like hotel, this flop house where he's going to stay. And he's in a full on, jeans and a denim shirt and a denim coat. And they're all different colors of denim, and they're all the wrong colors of denim. He just looks bad.
He looks awful. It's like, we were talking about it. Like, we had a good 2 minute conversation about how bad he looked.
Yeah.
It's really funny how obviously a cop he is for the first like half an hour of this movie.
Well, there's a bit where Jeff Goldblum walks in and goes, he just looks at him and goes, he's a cop.
Just like elementally in his being, he's a cop.
And his girlfriend immediately thinks he's a cop too. Like everyone just looks at him and goes, a cop. But because fucking Eddie, Roger Gwenver Smith, fresh off of doing all the Spike Lee movies, is here. Being like the actual flop sweat man who gets
he's so funny.
Yeah.
He's
who gets him like rested. Everyone's like, oh, I guess he's not a cop because he didn't talk when he went to jail.
No one realizing that that's like the most cop thing you can do.
Yeah. It's weird because like he's really good in this, and he's like the most like sniveling coward man in the world. But I think of him, Spike Lee did like a movie. He directed a movie that, Roger Smith did about doing Huey P. Newton, like it's called a Huey P. Newton story. It's like a one man show that he did about Huey P. Newton, who was a founder of the Black Panthers. It's incredible. It's one of my favorite Spike Lee things. I highly recommend you check it out. But in that, it's just like, he is just good, and it's like a really powerful performance. And watching him just play like shitty cowards in all the early Spike Lee movies and movies like this is really funny to me.
Yeah, he's got a lot of range.
Getting beat really to death by a fucking pool cue. bit where Felix Barossa, like the guy who's right above them, who's like a psychopath guy with a Groucho Marx mustache, where he's like clearly like about to kill him, and his reaction while he's like counting down to be like, all right, I need you to, you know, give me the money, I got till you got till 10, and then like right at like 3 he grabs a fork and like stabs him in the chest. Like, what were you trying to accomplish with this? You're not going to get a guy with a fork.
You were scared.
It was very funny. That scene was uncomfortable. It was just like dragging it out.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, like everyone else is like, just like, they know I was going to go. So everyone's like biting their nails, waiting to see how this plays out. That stuff's all very good.
I loved all the lights. So much weird lighting in this movie.
It's lit incredibly. It's just like completely like spotlights on every dramatic thing, right? It's like just heightened to the extreme.
Yes.
Constantly backlighting Lawrence Fishburne. It's fantastic. It looks incredible. Especially because the stuff in that like pool bar early on, which is like Eddie's hangout, is great because it's like a huge room, but there's always like a couple lights on in the middle and lots of like dusty fill in the background. And they just have loads of cool sets like that. All over the movie. It's mostly inside and weird places. Only very occasionally are they like outside in the daytime.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And when they are, it's like in fucking Jeff Goldblum's shitty lawyer places and apartments or what have you.
Oh, his house where he's berating his child for not knowing how to multiply.
the bit where he's berating his child for not knowing how to multiply it, but like very clearly, like so obviously it's the one time he's taught the kid anything and the mom's exhausted and being like, can I do it? I always do. You're making it worse by trying. Fuck off.
Yes.
I'm like, I recognize that.
And there's just like weird stuff where like there's like another drug dealer who's like trying to get in on their turf named Ivy. And he's got a driver who's like this like white lady who's just wearing like Streets of Rage Nazi cosplay.
Yes.
She's just in like this really glam, campy, like black hat and leather jacket with a bunch of ornamentation. I'm like, what's with this lady? Why is she here? Why is she like
what
this?
What movie is she from? Yes.
She like stepped out of a Joel Schumacher film. I don't like understand what's happening here.
That's how I felt about Ivy. I was like, with this ponytail, ugh. And he's quoting Terminator all the time.
Yes.
I'll be back. Have like you seen that movie?
You can rent it from the store.
And this is like Free Terminator 2, right? Because it's 92, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess it's about the same time, right?
Like yeah.
Around there, yeah.
I think it was after Terminator 2. Yeah, Terminator 2 is 91.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, July 91. And okay. Deep Cover is
April 92, so yes.
Probably being shot like around the time Terminator 2 theaters.
Yeah.
But I don't know exactly. There's no like, oh, this movie started shooting news for 90s movies.
Yeah. I love his shitty coward boss.
Yes.
Oh my god, his boss sucks.
Who's like a famous actor director, Charles Martin Smith, directed Air Bud.
Directed Air Bud?
Yeah, he's the director of Air Bud. He's in a bunch of movies. He's in American Graffiti and like Deep Impact. He's, you know, he is a notable character actor.
Okay.
Because he's got that face. Like, of course you'd cast this guy.
Oh yeah, he looks like
no one looks
that
like
guy.
A 50s caricature as much as that guy in the 90s.
Mm-hmm. I feel like the 90s really had.
It's like him and William H. Macy look like they're like Playboy cartoon characters, right?
Yes. 100%.
Yes. He's so good in this movie, because they play him really well as like also evil, like shitty boss, but is very aware of like he can't change anything. He's basically doing the same thing that Jeff Goldblum's doing, right? Of like rationalizing, like I'm going to go to Washington, I guess. There's nothing else to do.
Right.
It's not like anything good can come out of this, but it's just like embrace that.
Might as well go with it.
I love that Jeff Goldblum's master plan is to basically invent Adderall. He's like, cocaine's great and all, but we need like a patented drug that's not illegal that we can get that like has all of the like focus and energy of cocaine, but without any of the negative side effects.
It was really
we
funny
to sell this to students.
It's such a terrible plan because being illegal is how you are able to make the money. If it was legal, then companies could make it. You'd be competing with like corporations. They would have a process.
I mean, if you patent it, I guess it's fine, right? Like
I guess if he wants to just go legit, but like I feel like that would actually dampen the drug cartel market. When you're the drug cartel, you don't want it to go legal. You're going to compete in the legal stuff. It's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
But it is, it's a good running plot, because he's just like constantly, he like makes a business plan for the guy at the end and gives him in a big folder.
Yes. Like, he literally has their prospectus. And it's like, you give us this, what do they want? Like $20 million. He's like, cause they're going to give him back 80% of the 100 million. So, he gives us $20 million and we'll cut you in. And here's the projected revenue. And Guzman and his like guy both sniff the like like the fake cocaine, and immediately that guy's like, "Yeah, buy it. It's good."
Yeah, it hasn't even kicked in yet. Yeah. I assume.
and they have like their diplomatic plate, so they'll have to be immediately let go at the end. Just yes. Another classic.
Yeah, do not arrest or detain.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
Because that's way after a diplomatic immunity, right? I assume it is.
Is that Lethal Weapon 2?
I think so. Lethal Weapon 2 is 89. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not. That's honestly the best part of Lethal Weapon 2 is the guy shouting diplomatic immunity.
All I know about Lethal Weapon 2 is diplomatic immunity. It's just been revoked and then he gets shot. That's the only thing I know. I don't know anything else that happens in that movie.
Then that one, they're South African drug dealers. Because it's 89.
Oh. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
That's how we can navigate this when we leave 11.
It's such a like telling time, like historical document of where your drugs are coming from in your crime movies.
Yeah.
God.
But yeah, no, I'm very happy with this one. What a good ass movie.
Yeah, I liked it quite a bit. Lawrence Fishburne is always great. He does not quite have it in the way that I'm like Morpheus. After this, I watched a bunch of scenes of Morpheus and Jack Crawford from Hannibal. And I was like, man, Lawrence Fishburne can do no wrong.
Well, like, Morpheus is like meant to be the coolest guy alive in universe. He's meant to be kind of a little bit of like a square in this one.
That's true.
He's doing his cool guy noir stuff, but he's acting too much to do the Morpheus thing. Morpheus is also acting, but there's like a performance of coolness in Morpheus that is not present here.
Yeah, no, I know.
But you are correct that Matrix Reloaded Morpheus is the coolest guy in cinema history.
You know what? It's also Revolutions, or the bit where like it's all the stuff at the end where he's like he fights for us.
When he's like standing in the fucking
I fucking love basement. I love religious zealot Morpheus. I think it's good.
I love Morpheus in the waistcoat on top of the truck.
Well, yeah, that is cool. Don't get me wrong. He does use a samurai sword to cut a car in half.
You need to watch
Hannibal. I was watching all the Jack Crawford stuff. I'm like, you need to watch Hannibal.
No, Hannibal is on. I'm doing another project in, but the Hannibal is my next thing this year to work on in a couple months or so.
Because he's so good as Jack Crawford in that. What a guy.
It sounds like perfect casting. I mean, well, you know what? No, it doesn't actually. Because what a...
No, they have to radically rechange who Jeff Crawford is to make it work. But it's, you know, it's a three-person show.
Jack Crawford is not cool in any of the Hannibal
things. Yeah, no, they make him
the
third pillar of this whole weird, not love triangle, but, you know, the whole weird relationship dynamic of these three.
Yeah, you would have to do that because, like, in the Hannibal things I've watched, Jack Crawford is, like, the kind of, like, office guy who's there.
I mean, I really like the Jack Crawford in Manhunter. Great character.
Yes, that one's good.
The one in Silence of the Lambs is literally like just like the dad figure who sends Clarice out to go do shit. He does not matter.
No.
Jack Crawford,
and then in fucking The Bright Ratner Red Dragon, he's Harvey Keitel. I forgot about that until just a second. What a bad choice.
That's a terrible movie. That's truly a terrible fucking movie.
I still haven't seen it.
No, you're fine.
You don't need to.
You don't like that kind of bad movie enough to watch that movie.
Okay.
I do like that kind of bad movie enough to have.
Yes, you know, you absolutely should have seen Red Dragon. But it's you have to be a certain type of person.
Hannibal, however, the 2001 movie. What a stupid ass movie that is.
Jack Crawford
not
in that.
No, I don't think, because the Jack Crawford in Silence of the Lambs is like, they like have that whole scene where it's like even he is horny for Clarice, and it's like what?
Yeah.
I get what they're doing from, like, that movie's perspective, but it is funny when applied to, like, Jack Crawford in general, who's just a fucking guy in a suit, doesn't do anything guy.
Yeah. Yeah. What if it's Lawrence Fishburne in, like, a hat and a trench coat?
It might be an incredible classic TV show on NBC.
It turns out it is. I need to watch more Lawrence Fishburne movies. That's really it.
He's great. Larry Fishburne.
Yeah. One of the greats.
Yeah. I mean, you've all seen Apocalypse Now, right?
No.
Oh, okay. He's in that as like a baby. It's like one of his first roles. He's like, he's literally a teenager.
Because he's not that old now.
No, like, no.
That must be baby. Fishburne. He must be older than I realized in this, because I was like, I wonder how old he is in this.
What year is this? 92?
92, and he's 62 years old.
Well, it would be easier for me to just do the math on.
He was born in 61.
Yeah.
So he's 31?
Yeah, 31.
Damn. Look good for 31. Look good? I mean, Lawrence Fishburne. Just look good in general.
You know what they say.
I do know what they say. However, you can't deny that the second Lawrence Fishburne hits 40, you're like, he's way cooler now and way hotter. Yeah.
Yes, that's correct.
That's true.
That's more about me than it is about Lawrence Fishburne.
Yes,
I think.
No, I know. I'm just saying.
Because we've got our friend Autumn thinks that like deep cover Lawrence Fishburne's like the hottest man alive, and I'm like, no, I mean he gets better. You gotta wait till the late 90s.
He's not fine. He's a fine man.
Obviously, Lawrence Fishburne's just like incredibly hot all times, but this is absolutely a taste thing for you two.
Yes. Is that it? I think that might be it.
We've got some questions.
For me.
Yeah, so if you'd like to send in questions, you can send them to abnormalmappingpodcast@gmail.com. We have a bunch of questions because people love Deep Cover. And there's a couple questions about Deep Cover. First one's from Rick. If you could have Lord of the Rings style behind-the-scenes special features for any movie would you pick?
Star Wars: The Rise of Skywalker.
Fuck, that's a great answer.
Easiest number one with a bullet. Oh, no questions asked.
I'm mad about that one.
I need the email leaks. I need to know every single thing that happened behind the scenes in that movie.
God.
I need every cut, like, dated on different days. I need the whole thing. I need the entire process documented as openly and transparently as possible, please.
You need the episode one documentary, but about episode 9.
Yes.
Yeah. That was the one documentary is so good. People go in to see Phantom Menace in theaters because it's the 25th anniversary or whatever. If you've never watched the episode one, I assume almost our audience has. If you've never watched the episode one documentary, it is the most accidentally telling on yourself thing in the entire world. It's so good.
Rick McCallum, villainous history.
Yes. The Lord of the Rings documentaries are weird because, like, I think they're very, like, good, but it's about a good movie, and it's about how successful they were making that good movie. And it's only in retrospect that it takes on this interesting fall, because, like, the second time they tried this, they sank an entire nation's economy.
Those documentaries have, like, fucking Peter Jackson ready to kill himself on sets.
Yeah. Like, and now they're going to do it again.
Well, this is Andy Serkis doing one movie. Did you see the Hollywood Reporter article that was like, this movie might be inspired by the popularity of the video game Gollum?
I promise that's not the case. Andy Serkis needs something to do, and this is it.
He directed that second Venom movie. I didn't realize that.
Yeah. Yeah, people really like that movie.
Yeah, I should watch the Venom movies. Everyone's ready, gearing up for the third. Well done for those Venom movies of just releasing three movies pretty quickly, like normal movies. Crazy.
Yeah, normal fucking movies. Some people can do it.
Some people can do it. Somehow Sony did it in a Spider-Man movie. Hey, I watched Madam Web. That doesn't do it.
Fair enough. I haven't answered this question yet. Destiny, do you have an answer?
I was going to say, like, either Putney Swope, just because it's a movie I want to know everything about, or, Rebel Without a Cause, because it'd be fucking cool to have that footage of those actors at that time.
Okay, I don't have an answer. I realized there's a movie I didn't log on Letterboxd. This is a problem of using Letterboxd to remember what I watched. I watched Sorcerer in the last month, which I forgot to log, which is the William Friedkin adaptation of the book that Wages of Fear is based on. It's really good. It's not anywhere near as good as Wages of Fear.
It was like the big movie of the summer going up against a little fucking rinky-dink model movie called Star Wars.
Yeah, have you seen Sorcerer, Jackson?
I've not. No, people talk about it.
The thing with this is, like, it opens up with, like, little short films of all four of the guys, and they're all, like, these cartoonish 70s, like, genre pieces. Like, one of them is a getaway driver for the mob, and they accidentally kill, like, they're, like, robbing this, like, church that's doing like money laundering, and it turns out the priest that they gunned down is like the brother of like a mobster, and now he's chasing him, so that's how he ends up in the South American country. One of them is like a French banker who embezzled a bunch of money, and he's got to flee the country, and that's why he's there. One of them is like an assassin. They're just like really arch and goofy in the way that like 70s like specifically crime movies can be. It just has this way more overwrought sense about it than Wages of Fear. But then like the plot kicks up and they're driving trucks with full of explosives over mountains. You're like, well, that part's just great. You can't fuck that up. It's like the easiest thing in the world. I liked it. It's worth watching. It's no Wages of Fear, but I had a good time with it.
Well, no, I don't have an answer
for
this,
but I was thinking of something like Wages of Fear would be, or just a movie that has a lot of a logistically complicated production is one I want these kind of special features for.
You want to have another fucking, what's the movie about making Fitzcarraldo?
Yeah, I exactly was thinking of that, and I can't remember the name of the movie.
I don't remember the name of it, but I know they yes. got the movie, but also the documentary everyone liked even more about moving a fucking boat across a mountain.
Yeah, or the one about Apocalypse Now is also one of those.
Yeah, like, Heart of Darkness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Crystal writes in, what organization or community could you confidently infiltrate? Can't talk.
This is depressing. Because of all the reading that I've done, if, like, let's say I were a cop, and they were like, you gotta infiltrate this group because you know the most about it, I could totally get into the Hare Krishnas and just, like, fuck shit up.
Okay, Jackson?
I was thinking about this, and I was just, like, bummed out, because I'm like, it's really, I can only just do it to gamers. That's fucked up. I hate myself. What have I done with my life? I want to infiltrate gamers. I don't have any other knowledge. Oh, you can infiltrate gamers or, like, maybe some annoying weebs. Not even any, I don't know enough about modern stuff to infiltrate the annoying weebs. So, like, it would have to be gamers. It sucks.
I was going to say a monastery.
No, you couldn't. You could not infiltrate a monastery. This is your I could fight a bear.
You're right. You're totally right. I think I could get into a cult, though. I do think that's true.
Yeah, me
Anyone
too.
Anyone can get into a cult. The cults are easy. You just got
No, that's not true. I think infiltrating a cult without becoming a part of the cult is like genuinely difficult.
No one said that you didn't have to become part of the cult. I'm just saying that the cults will signal your expected behavior much more than other groups.
I don't know. LV writes in, if you could have any musician have their debut single Real or Imaginary as a movie theme, who would it be and what movie would it be for? Because this is Snoop Dogg's first so featuring on this Dre track it's his first solo track.
Nice. I mean, the song at the end of the movie is fucking good. It's like,
yeah.
It's better than the rap in the middle of the movie. There's a guy rapping on stage at like a party scene.
it's really bad.
It's not very good. Sorry to this man.
But there's also the classic, the mandatory, insanely corny 90s sex scene music.
Oh yes, I love a cheesy sex scene.
They should have worn the masks for the sex scene.
Yes, he got two of them.
What's your musician?
I could not think of an answer for this question because I couldn't think of any like good debut singles that would make good movie songs. So I'm sorry.
I mean, you just pick a musician. Pick a musician, pick a movie. It doesn't have to be their real debut single.
Oh, well, I'm always down for like it'd be really fun if like they had gotten some of the punk bands from Decline of Western Civilization to do like a mainstream movie soundtrack, like just a bunch of punk bands on like a superhero movie or something. I don't know.
I want the Mountain Goats guy to be introduced to the world singing about Space Jam instead of R. Kelly.
Oh man. I want
to have it like super overall narrative.
That's good.
About Michael Jordan, but it's just no one knows who the Mountain Goats are, so they're not reading it as like a parody of his style.
No.
He just has to be super self serious.
Yes,
I want Lee and Nancy doing Sergio Leone movies.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah. If you get Baz Luhrmann to do a maximalist adaptation of a classic of literature, which would you choose? Dracula, obviously.
Moby Dick, obviously.
That's a good one. I just like Dracula a lot.
I haven't seen any Baz Luhrmann movies except like a bit of Romeo plus Juliet in school.
You haven't seen any Baz Luhrmann movies?
Nah. I've seen like clips. I've seen bits of that one in school because, you know.
I mean, I don't think you're going to like any of them, but it's just weird that you haven't seen any.
Yeah, I just never seen any of them. Oh,
Romeo and Juliet is the one you'd like the most, for the record.
Yeah, that's a fun one. That's a movie to rewatch for me.
The Baz Luhrmann memory is my girlfriend in high school messaging me one day, be like, guess who a Nick is in the Great Gatsby movie? You'll never guess. And I was like, I don't fucking know. Tobey Maguire? And just immediately, she was so pissed off because I wasn't like trying. I was just throwing out a guy. And that one makes me smile. That's a treasured, stupid memory.
I never saw that Great Gatsby movie. No, Anybody see that here?
I mean, Jackson hasn't seen any, and I didn't see it, so no.
Okay. But I would like him to do Of Mice and Men.
Ooh.
Ooh.
With the most lavish... Oh, I'm going to execute my best friend scene in my life.
Look, as one of the few people on Earth who both saw and kind of liked Australia, he could do it.
I thought you were going to say the 90s Of Mice and Men movie.
No.
Gary's Beats or whatever.
I've never seen that. I love the book.
Which fictional character would you watch an indulgent biopic for? And also, maybe, who's the actor that cast that character?
I could only think of Captain Kirk, and I don't want William Shatner, but I could not think of a suitable actor. So somebody help me.
I don't know.
Like, who's a current actor that could pull off a Captain Kirk that isn't the TV guy?
Because the TV guy is not pulling off a Captain Kirk. He's playing the character, but he's not doing that.
Exactly.
I really like his James Kirk. I'm super into him. I'm like obsessed.
He's the guy from the Vampire Diaries, so it's very weird because he's just a different guy. I like him in the show,
but like, I feel like the question of having a Kirk biopic, you'd want more of a Shatner type guy, but I don't know what that
exactly,
would be.
But I don't know who that would be, but that's the movie I would watch.
I think my answer is Mayo Deftenwolf movie starring Lawrence Fishburne, obviously.
A who movie?
Don't worry about it.
This is for the audience. He is the ostensibly most iconic character from the fucking Coheed and Cambria lore that Jackson's covered on.
With Lawrence Fishburne.
Yes. He's basically like Darth Vader. He's the Darth Vader of Coheed and Cambria.
Nice. Yeah, like the Emperor's a shitty blue wrinkled guy. And then he's got a little, like a fucking henchman that goes and kills everyone, and that's Mayo. Yeah. He's just like a cool black guy that gets all the murder done.
He's black!
Yes.
Yeah, that's why Lawrence Fishburne. I assume. But I see it, but now I'm like, let me find you a picture of this fucking Mayo.
Oh, yes, so does see a picture of Mayo Dustin Wolf.
Okay, I'm getting ready. I'm bracing myself. Oh my god, he looks like, also that's perfect. That's
when you search Mayo Deftenwolf into Google, the first real person that comes up in the searches is Lawrence Fishburne from someone's fan casting.
Oh, incredible. Yeah, no, I'm glad people
perfect.
Are on it.
It's absolutely perfect.
Yeah, he's like one of Darth Vader or Kano from Mortal Kombat.
Yes, I was about to say he's got a Mortal Kombat vibe.
It's stupid. Coheed's bad. The Coheed lore is really bad. You'd think it'd be fun, and it kind of is to think about, but it is really bad. I have no fucking idea. I'm like, you could put Columbo in school and have him be the most annoying person of all time.
Oh my god. I hate that. I blew a good answer on this one. Rick asks, you're in charge of a film adaptation. You're told Lawrence Fishburne will be your star. What are you adapting?
I'm adapting Moby Dick, and he's in it. He's one of the guys. I don't know.
one of the guys. Wouldn't he just be Ahab?
I would want him to be Ahab. Definitely, yes.
I'm like, I guess you could get young Lawrence Fishburne the other way, but I feel like that would be a waste.
Yeah, no, that wouldn't be as good.
The Odyssey. He's Odysseus, obviously.
Ooh.
A very controversial Three Kingdoms adaptation here, Cao Cao.
Oh, I love it though. Here's the thing though. You need to get someone who can play against him, and that's gonna be really hard.
Who's the Lube to Lawrence Fishburne's South Town? Write in.
Oh, yeah. Please write in, because I don't – you got to, like, nail it. It's got to be someone who's, like, truly, like, can hold their own, but also is, like, a little younger, can't be the same, like, age, but has to have different but equal charisma.
Yeah. And it's, like, playing a kind of naive, misguided nobility.
Yes.
Okay.
Please write in. We got to know. Bring a question a week for this.
Yeah, yeah. Please. I hope somebody writes in with a good answer.
Jacob writes in, reading reviews online, it seems people are fairly split on Goldblum's performance. I really enjoyed what he brought to the film. Not trying to describe it, but to my mind, Goldblum and Fishburne express charisma in two very different styles, which I found they're pairing interesting to watch. Just a question if you had thoughts on this.
I thought it was like really good in a way that made me surprised that Goldblum agreed to it. I feel like it like kind of attacks his whole
persona. This is pre the blowing up of Goldblum. Like, yeah, it's really the 1-2 punch of Jurassic Park and ID4 that really like turns Jeff Goldblum into like the caricature that he becomes the rest of his career.
Yeah, because he's more of a character actor guy before this.
Yeah.
Like, he's not really like Jeff Goldblum, you know?
I think like the scene I like is when he's in the car and they're just like the deal's gone wrong and he's just like wide eyed and everyone's screaming and he's just the guy waving a gun around in the limousine. And I'm like, this is like an evolution of the Fly Jeff Goldblum, which is an early classic Goldblum.
Mm-hmm.
I just
it was very precise about how much like charming guy that's like hitting on women constantly is like the worst man alive.
Yes.
Like, it's just so like modern persona of Jeff Goldblum, how he is in person, how his like myth is, his like allegations of just, no, he's like that too much.
Yes.
Like, he's just playing that in this movie, and this movie is really precise about how awful that person is.
Well, the mid period where they're just like buddy comedy running around and he starts roasting him for being like his weird like black women fetish is very funny to me.
That's so good.
Kieran writes in, saw Deep Cover a few months ago. Enjoyed the two movies. What? I don't understand what this question is.
I think they meant to compare it to, like, they watched two movies as a double feature, but they forgot to include the name of the other movie.
Yeah, I don't know what else anyway.
I assume it means that, like, the cop movie and the crime movie are different things, but I don't know.
Watched it mostly because how hot Lawrence Fishburne looked in the trailer, which leads to my question. What's the shallowest reason you've watched a film for?
My entire 4 years of high school was, hot guy in movie, hot girl in movie, we go see movie. We rented every single James Spader movie we could find because James Spader was one of our big crushes. Like, that was high school.
I've never done this. I've never watched a movie because someone was hot in it. I just don't.
Really? I've seen so many goddamn Michael Pitt movies. Like,
not even once in my life. Like, there are actors and actresses I like. You know, I'll go seek out movies people are in them. I just don't do this, I guess. I don't know.
I did this when I was young. I don't really do it now. Well, that's not true. I did see a movie just because Kristen Stewart was in it. But it was a good movie.
I'll see movies because people are in them, but not because I'm like, I've got an intense crush on them. I just feel like it's different. Maybe it's the same thing. I'm just using different language. I don't know. It could be. You can make that argument. I haven't thought about this.
I don't think it's, you know, I think it's different. But yeah, no, just to look at hot people, that was like my whole teenage MO for watching movies. It was the only reason I saw Donnie Darko is because the hot guy from Phantom Planet is in it as like a not hot guy. He plays a school bully at the beginning of the movie.
It's a really funny reason to see Donnie Darko.
I think maybe my answer to this is going to see Fast and Furious Tokyo Drift because it's about drifting in Tokyo.
And you were so hot people, rewarded. But you've never been more rewarded for a shallow impulse in your life than hearing, they made a Fast and Furious movie about drifting in Tokyo, and then the movie is Tokyo Drift.
Well, so here's the thing is, I saw the first Fast and Furious on cable, and then I caught the second one. I thought it was bad the first time I watched it because I was young and stupid.
Yes.
But then the third one's like, this one's about drifting, and you know, it doesn't have any of those guys, so maybe it'll be good because I was a fucking little nerd who really liked Eurobeat and drifting. And you know, and I went to go see it, and it was good. It's been good all along. It was always good.
It's not as good, but it is a little cringe.
Yeah, I changed my mind on Too Fast, Too Furious. Yeah, no, I know.
I had a great time rewatching that like a year ago or so.
Are we gonna? Hilver, right? Oh, sorry.
Hilver writes in, Steven Soderbergh is a better director than Steven Spielberg. True or false? False.
False. False. False. False. Easy. I like Steven Soderbergh. Great director. Not as good as Steven Spielberg. Just easy. Easy. Yeah. Easy ruling. It is much apart.
I mean, I'd accept an argument that Soderbergh is, like, overall more interesting because he definitely, like, is trying more things and is just kind of like, he clearly just enjoys making movies in different modes and experimenting, and Spielberg makes Spielberg movies. Mm-hmm. But it's not even close.
Yeah, no, like, I love the Ocean movies. Ocean 11, perfect movie. Ocean 12, not a perfect movie, but a better movie. And Ocean 13 exists.
Oh.
And, like, he's got a lot of goofy movies in there. I haven't even watched, like, half of them because he just was, for, like, 15 years, just like, every 6 months, he had a new one.
Yeah.
and I you know, generally like the ones I've seen a lot, but Spielberg.
Yeah. Luke writes in, this question's mainly for me, but everyone else can answer. Like, you've talked about your dislike of crime movies in the past. What do you think would make an ideal crime movie that you would want to watch? I mean, this was one of them. I thought this was really good. The thing, watching this, the like, I had a couple reactions. It was like, one, The Departed's fucking stupid.
Yeah, yes, The Departed's bad.
Two, I love The Sopranos. These are just the thoughts I had while I was watching this. I just fucking love The Sopranos.
I love The Sopranos.
About The Departed. Yes? The Departed is a crime movie, but Infernal Affairs is a spy movie.
Okay.
That's the problem.
I've seen Infernal Affairs, but not since I was like 20, so I just don't have an opinion about this.
I would say Deep Cover also kind of a spy movie. There's a huge overlap, but the second you
there's
get
so
to, like,
little of Deep Cover devoted to him, like, oh, are they going to find out that he's a cop? It's not really a...
That's not the spy movie thing. The spy movie thing is placed in a position to realize, to come to an understanding about your total disillusionment with, like, the state and your position in it. Which is what Deep Cover is about. And it's what Infernal Affairs is about. And then The Departed is about.
Here's the thing,
like,
is I think crime movies can be about that. I think Deep Cover is really good about that. The thing with a lot of crime movies, and I think of this in, like, the Scorsese mold, which I like Scorsese's crime movies enough. Like, I like Casino, but Scorsese's got the thing where because of, he makes all of his movies are, like, deeply infused with his Catholicism. They're always about the weird guilt and punishment inherent in the criminal lifestyle. It's like always there always must be a comeuppance, and I just don't believe it. I don't think there has to be a comeuppance, and I don't believe we have to be like criminals must have some sort of like recompense for all the evil they've done. In a world where like Deep Cover understands that the government is way more evil than any of these drug dealers, ultimately.
Mm-hmm.
Even the like psychopath ones who are not sympathetic.
I don't think that Scorsese doesn't understand that in like all of his movies.
Yeah, but I do think fundamentally his movies are about like eventually, and this is inherent in the genre, is that, like eventually it's like the good times have to end. You know, Tony Montoya has to stand there and get gunned down.
That's not Scorsese.
No, I know. I'm just saying, that's why I'm saying it's inherent in the genre. It's not just a Scorsese thing. I think this is just inherent to the form of crime. And that's the thing that I always find like tedious. Like the bit where it's like, oh, the good times end and everyone's strung out. The one movie that is not necessarily a crime, I think it can count as a crime movie that does this really well, who understands that there's something on the other side of this is Boogie Nights, where it does have the weird, everyone's paying like for all of the good times and it's bad and grim. But then life just keeps going on because they're not dealing drugs. They're just doing porn. And at the end, everyone's a little older and they're still trying to make it work as this weird family, still in the mirror trying to like, coke himself to an erection, right? Like that's like the good end of the crime film.
Oh, Boogie Nights.
Boogie Nights is one of the movies that was maybe the most not what I expected when I watched it, because I heard about it as like a classic movie of the 90s. I knew it was about porn. I knew about the like massive prosthetic penis at the end and like this like super bleak scene in a mirror that was like, oh, so it's about like the total emptiness of all this stuff, which is what I expected. But no, it's the exact opposite.
No, it's
Boogie Nights might actually be my answer. It might actually be my answer to this question. Boogie Nights is the ideal crime movie. Yeah.
The highest possible fidelity.
When Buck walks into that awful like stick up and ends up with a bag full of money and doesn't get shot, you're like, man, sometimes things can just go good. Sometimes
that
people just make
amazing.
It out. Yeah.
I love that scene.
He just everyone fucking does and he's got the money.
Yeah.
He's so good.
Yeah, I love Big Nets. I should watch more of his movies.
Jonathan writes in, don't really have much to add other than the casting. This film's crazy good. Not sure anyone has seen any other Bill Duke films. Me and Destiny have seen Sister Act 2.
Think about it all the time.
But A Rage in Harlem is a good companion film if you haven't seen it. And I have not seen it. I should watch that. He made it right before this. It's got Forest Whitaker in it.
Oh, I love him.
Yeah. Nice. Yusuf writes in, is A24 really flattening culture as one guy on Twitter would have us believe? Also, perhaps more importantly, what's your favorite A24 movie and why is it Moonlight 2016? I mean, I had not looked up a list of A24 movies, but it almost certainly is going to be Moonlight. That's a good fucking movie. Here's the link to the tweet in question, which is one. It was like, A24 represents a flattening of culture. A24 is the new dive bar in your neighborhood with the elevated food and cocktail program. A24 is a speakeasy that is fully licensed. A24 is a curated retail shop.
It's a very funny tweet.
I mean, I don't disagree with the... I don't think A24 is causing it. I think it's just, like, the way culture's going and A24...
Well, yeah, my actual thing is, like, A24 is not the problem. Twitter's the problem. Like,
well, Twitter's not the problem.
Like social media is the problem in which people start to, like, create a shorthand and, like, a elevate... If social media didn't exist, no one would talk about A24 the way they do.
It's true.
Well, yeah, the internet and the connection therein has, like, allowed corporations to create like lifestyle branding on a level that we just didn't see before the internet.
A24 posting precedes A24 leaning into the lifestyle branding.
Yeah, but I'm saying it all comes out of like being online. Yeah. You can't do this level of like lifestyle brand awareness without online connecting everyone that fast, right? Like,
yeah.
It just doesn't work.
Yeah.
But yeah, and also I looked at a list of A24 movies. Movies aren't that bad. There's not a lot of bad ones.
There's a lot of movies here I would not go see. I'll tell you. I'm gonna be honest. There's a lot of shit here that looks bad.
I've seen six A24 movies. Apparently,
I think I've seen about around four or maybe a little more. I don't know. But
so I'm gonna scroll. So literally in 2013 they put out Spring Breakers and The Bling Ring, which is very funny because one of those movies is really good, and one of those is really bad. I'll let you figure out which one's which. Actually, it's Spring. You know it's Spring Breakers. Spring Breakers. We watched Spring Breakers like just in this year. I think I watched it. I don't even know if we talked about it on a podcast, but Spring Breakers.
You watched it?
We did not. You did rewatch it.
Yeah.
I didn't even.
Under the Skin. I like Under the Skin. It's really funny watching Under the Skin. Under the Skin was the first movie I was like, well, this is about transness in my own journey as a person. And then I immediately went online and saw a bunch of interviews where they're like, I don't know what you're talking about. It's not about that at all. And I was like, you're all idiots. You don't know what the fuck you made.
Yes.
I saw Obvious Child. I like Obvious Child. That was all right. That's like a normal ass movie that they don't make those kind of movies anymore. Me and Destiny saw it together. Jackson's seen Tusk. I've not seen Tusk.
I have not.
It's half decent, but then the rest of it is the worst movie you've ever seen in your life.
We saw Ex Machina for an earlier version of this podcast.
I liked it.
Wasn't that off like first movie?
It's up there. It's very close. Yeah.
It's really close.
The Witch.
Love it.
Seen that.
One of my favorites. Okay.
Green Room. I love Green Room. I was talking about Green Room on Around the Long Fire just last week.
I think about Green Room all the time.
Because we were talking about movies that kind of fucked us up.
I can never see Green Room.
And Green Room has like some violence in it that made me, it's like, I found it very affecting in a way gore in movies typically does not affect me.
Mm. Yeah. I can't see Green Room.
No, you can't.
The Lobster. I saw The Lobster. The Lobster's all right.
I like The Lobster. I liked it more than you.
Moonlight's very good.
Moonlight's very good.
Moonlight's very good. It might be the answer here.
Director of the Mufasa movie.
Yeah, well, look. And then we run into a bunch of stuff I've not seen. I liked Lady Bird. Lady Bird's pretty good.
Liked Lady Bird a lot.
Disaster Artist is okay, but fuck James Franco.
Yeah. I Love Lies Bleeding was good.
Hereditary fucking blows. I fucking hated Hereditary.
I liked it. I thought it was unsettling, though, and I like an unsettling movie.
Well, I didn't. Midsommar I thought was all right. I liked Midsommar.
I liked Midsommar a lot.
The Lighthouse. Love The Lighthouse.
Me too.
I think it's weird that people are like down. I know Robert Eggers is annoying, but I like The Lighthouse so much. I'm like, look, even annoying people can make good movies. It's allowed.
Yeah, it's allowed.
It's legal.
Most people who make good movies are annoying.
Yeah.
Nope. I just think most people who make movies are annoying. Generally, if you're going to have like that level of like wealth and power and access, it just self-selects for annoying people just who have to play the politics to be a director of movies.
I watched fucking X. I hate X so much. X is maybe one of the worst movies I've ever seen.
X is M's Gundam Seed, because they're going to watch all of those movies. They can't look away, and they hate them so profoundly.
Yeah, no, Maxine coming out this year. I'll watch it when I can download it, because I'm not going to go pay money to see Maxine.
But you will be watching it, and you will be reporting on how fucking much you hate it.
Everything Ever All at Once we watched for this podcast. It was kind of mid, and then everyone's really annoying about it. Pearl is probably better than X, but I still hated X so much that I just couldn't get myself over the hump for that one. I think that might be everything, because we've run into COVID happening, and I just haven't watched movies at all.
Yeah.
I would like to watch Bo is Afraid. I've seen some people say that movie's all right.
I hated it. Hated.
Okay.
Well. I hated this movie.
Oh, Zone of Interest is them. Zone of Interest is really fucking good. Oh, The Iron Claw is on Max. It just hit Max, and I want to watch that. That seemed like a really cool movie.
I don't even know what that is.
That's a biopic of the Von Erich family, who was this very unfortunate wrestling family in Texas in the 60s and 70s.
Oh, okay.
That movie's going to fuck you up.
I mean, I already know what happens to everybody.
You're going to be like, maybe you're going to be like stone-faced, like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah. The Ric Flair is really bad. Correct. Everyone's right about that. I've seen shorts of it. Anyway, that's all the A24s I've seen. Moonlight is absolutely the best one of these. I think I would probably give Spring Breakers or The Lighthouse my number two nod. So,
yeah, I was going to say, I like those a lot. I like Everything Everywhere at Once a lot more than y'all. I don't think they're flattening culture.
I mean, so A24 is obnoxious. They have obnoxiously really leaned into this, where it's like, oh, you know, here's all the A24 branded stuff, and here's books of all the A24 releases or whatever. Like, yeah, it's very, like, aesthetic. I mean that derogatorily, but it really is just, like, people need to learn that production houses are not actually anything. Mm-hmm. They don't represent anything.
Yeah, because, like, my partner will always say, oh, it's an A24, like, really excited about a movie, and I think that's silly.
That is crazy.
Yeah.
Who watches movies like that?
Yeah.
And like, it's like learning that someone's like, oh, it's a fucking EA game. Like, what?
Yeah, exactly. Like, it doesn't really mean anything. So, yeah, like, one time they leaned over and we were about to watch Love Lies Bleeding in the theater. And they go, oh, I didn't know this was an A24. And I was just like...
Are they doing that to, like, get a rise out of you? Or is it
earnest? No, they're being genuine. They were being completely genuine. My partner doesn't antagonize me.
Cringe.
I understand this, like, so this is one of the things, like, I look at this email, I'm like, I've heard, this is a thing I have anecdotal evidence for, but because I'm just not hanging out in those spaces, I'm not hanging out around the, like, annoying film students who are doing this, which I believe are real, but it's so distant from me that I'm like, no one's like that. No one's saying, like, oh, I only like the movies that this fucking brand puts out. Sure, that hasn't happened to cinema, but apparently it has a little. I don't know.
For the record, my partner does not do that, but yeah,
the email's more specific about, like, a guy on Twitter type person. I've just tried to move away from roasting your partner who I don't know.
I know them. I will roast them. I don't care.
They listen. Hi.
Oh, okay. Well, don't be cringe. And then we have one from Tron, or I think we've answered a lot of these, but there is one about favorite screen wipes in films. Do you have any? Because there's one good one where it's like someone walking across the screen and the wipe is them walking across frame.
That one's amazing.
I don't know of any off the top of my head. I'm sure there are some. I just can't think of any.
I mean, I have the obvious one, but I can't think of any, like, you know, every single race and speed racer where all the commentators are constantly.
Oh, that's absolutely one of them. The one I was thinking of was not necessarily wipes, but I'm sure wipes are included in that. Was all the scene transitions in Ang Lee's Hulk.
Oh, there's some wipes in there. There's some ridiculous wipes. Yeah. That's another good one. Wipe in this one is so much more like, because Hulk and Speed Racer are like about that aesthetic, right? They're like, it's like so in your face. Whereas this, I think that's the only one that's that ludicrous.
Yeah, it really
showy.
Comes out of nowhere, yes. And the cut is to Jeff Goldblum and Lawrence Fishburne sitting on a car with like blue lighting drenched over them talking about killing a guy. It's really funny.
I love movies.
Yeah.
Movies.
And that brings us to the end of our questions. If you'd like to send questions, you can send them to abnormalmappingpodcast@gmail.com. Destiny, what are we watching next time?
Hold on. I got to pull it up because I picked it in the middle of recording.
Okay.
And I
want
to
say,
I
know? But no, I don't know.
No, because I was going to pick something else and then, I don't know, I just got talked into changing it.
Well, the movie I'm picking after that is also 3 hours long, and we didn't want to stack 2 3-hour long movies.
Yeah. So we're doing Don't Look Now from 1973.
I don't know what this
Nicholas
is.
Nicholas Rogue movie.
Oh, okay.
Donald Sutherland.
Don't Look Now.
Julie Christie.
A thriller.
It's a thriller. It might be boring.
This poster's out of control, though.
I did so much of this movie in school.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
Huh. Oh, okay. Well, we'll have an interesting discussion.
Yeah. It's a little like someone's like, oh, for our book club this week, we're going to read The Great Gatsby.
I've literally never heard of this movie before, so that's very
funny.
Never?
Wait, really? It's
I've heard
very
of it.
Famous British horror movie.
Well, it's very horror movie. British. Like, why would I care? Yeah.
Oh, fair enough. Well, I can't believe you haven't heard of this. The British person says. Stupid.
Anyway, Destiny, where can people find you online?
At Fridge Buzz Now, in most places.
Jackson,
you can find me at Headfalls Off on Twitter and co-host on Blue Sky. You can find the podcast we do at abnormalmapping.com.
You can find me on Twitter at @EM_being. If you'd like to support our work, you can go to patreon.com/normalmapping. For $1 a month, you get The Great Gundam Project. We're currently watching Gundam Unicorn. For $5 a month, you get Blockbusters every month, where we watch a classic, big successful movie. We're going to watch Crocodile Dundee next week, and that'll be out, so look forward to that. We already have our next movie picked, which is actually not a hugely successful movie. It's an influential TV movie. I'll say that. Tease for next time. But there's a lot of great stuff there. And then for $10, you get VoIP Life, which is just us goofing off every 2 weeks about whatever. There haven't really been any movie episodes recently. If you'd like some more movie talk, you can listen to me and my friend Neve on Around the Long Fire every week at abnormalmapping.com/longfire, which is about classic literature. We're currently reading Mort d'Arthur, but we often talk about movies and other things like video games and VTubers and therapy and anything else. It's very chill. People should check that out. I think that's everything. We'll be back in 2 weeks. Talk about Don't Look Now. Is that what it's called? I immediately forgot.
Don't Look right? Now.
Yeah, okay. movies got bad titles. Anyway, look forward to that. Until then, movies.
Now more than ever.
Don't expect to like them.